Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Eric Spanberg, in for Mike Collins. Few other coaches in any sport have dominated the way Dawn Staley has over the last decade. Staley coaches the women's basketball team at the University of South Carolina, a job she took on in 2008 after a highly decorated playing career and an 8-year run as the head coach at Temple. Among her achievements, leading the Gamecocks, 3 national titles, including a perfect 38-0 season in 2024, capped off by beating Iowa and Caitlin Clark. 7 Final Four appearances, all since 2015. 18 players drafted to the WNBA since 2015, second best of any program. And as a side hustle, she spent her summer in 2021 leading Team USA to a gold medal at the Tokyo Games as head coach. All of that followed a Hall of Fame playing career, including 2 National Player of the Year awards at the University of Virginia and 3 trips to the Final Four. Her professional career began before the WNBA existed. Staley did end up playing in the W, mostly with the Charlotte Sting, who drafted her in 1999. And Staley is nowhere near done. She's only in her mid-50s, and the Gamecocks remain a powerhouse program, setting attendance records along the way. Now Staley is telling the other side of her story in a new autobiography. Uncommon Favor, Basketball, North Philly, My Mother, and the Lessons I Learned from All 3. This spring, at a ceremony in Columbia to honor her with a statue unveiling, she gave some hints to what that book includes, starting with her platform as a national championship-winning coach.
It has always been apparent to me that most women doing the work that creates change don't have platforms. But for those of us who do, we have a responsibility to speak loudly for them and for those women who come after. After all, there is still so much to be done.
And she spoke about her faith.
It is only by God's grace that I'm standing here today. I know that for sure. And if I said it once, I've said it 1,000 times. I am merely a messenger. There is no victory or honor I can claim as my own. All glory belongs to God forever and always. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you.
Dawn Staley, welcome to Charlotte Talks.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with the title of this book. Here you are being interviewed by ESPN's Holly Rowe on the court after your team knocked off Iowa to win the 2024 national championship.
We serve an unbelievable God. Uncommon favor,
you said that day, and it's the title of your book. How do you define uncommon favor?
Well, I defined it when, like, extraordinary things happen that probably the people who are witnessing it are amazed and astounded by what's taking place. And then for me, myself, like, If I look at all the things that have happened in my life and my career, I can't say that I worked hard for it, but everybody works hard. Like, a lot of people work hard that don't actually get what they deserve. They don't get what they've worked for. But I seem to be able to get things that I work for. And then along the way, it's tenfold. And I don't think it just happens to everyone. So I do think God favors people. And I think God uses people for what we want to do and what we don't want to do. And if you follow his plan, if you do what you're supposed to do, you can kind of walk into the heirs of an uncommon favor career in life. And that's how I explained it for me. Now, don't get me wrong. Like, I don't, you know, I grew up in the church. I am a praying and faithful woman. I by no means want to offend anybody. So all the things that I'm saying are mine. They're my perspective. They're not me putting that on someone else to say, well, why doesn't, it's not for me to ask why. It's really not for you to ask why. I think it's for all of us to do what we're supposed to be doing, to live out our truth and our purpose in life. And once you do that, I think that life is, I mean, that life is satisfying, but when there's another element to it and it lifts every area and pretty much everything that you set your mind to do. And for me, it's just, I don't do it for me. I've shared my story in this book, Uncommon Favor, because I feel like it's relatable. Have I attained some goals that most people won't? Like, most people won't be Olympians. Most people won't win national championships. But for what people are doing in their lives, equate to those things that are as big as the goals that I wanted when I was a young kid. So I don't want to just, you know, I don't want to throw my religion but the foundation of who I am and where I grew up, it just comes with the territory.
You write in the book about your mother's intense religious faith and how that seeped into you. A lot of people in sports and in other walks of life, for that matter, they cite faith when things go well. But what struck me about your philosophy is that you say that you are thankful for defeats too. Not that you enjoy them, but you're thankful for them. How did you come to that conclusion or realization?
I mean, it seems like when I've had a defeat, it's a big defeat. Like it is losing a national championship. It is, you know, not getting the top recruit, right? It is not making an Olympic team. It's big to me. And in those moments, I think about all the wins. Like, who am I? And I preach this to my players, my former players, because, you know, they could miss a game-winning basket. And they're just so focused on the missed basket. And if you stay so focused on a missed basket, you're going to miss out on all the great stuff that's going to come. And then out of your entire career, that one missed basket, you're going to put all your apples in that one basket. Like, basketball has been too good to you for you to just really stay focused on that moment. So you got to move off of it. Obviously, it happened for a reason. You try to find out why. If that is, I got to work a little bit harder on finishing through contact. If I got to work a little bit harder in preparing for a national championship game. If, you know, I got to work a little bit harder in what I need to do to land a recruit. I mean, all of those things you got to digest and dissect and decompress. And then you move. I'm able to, and through that process, I learned to appreciate failure. I don't like it, but I appreciate the process of failing, because you can not fail, you know, again in that same manner, because it was a lesson.
About a month ago, the city of Columbia unveiled a statue of you holding the championship net in your hand. Here's part of what you said that day.
And the unfortunate truth that only about 6%, Mayor, I think you said 5%. I think this statue might have added to that percentage. But only 6% of statues around the world recognize women.
As you well know, that statue stands in the same city where, until 2015, the Confederate flag still flew above the state capitol. What goes through your mind when you consider those things and the juxtaposition of everything going on, not only in your life, but in your state?
You know, I say to this, it's another uncommon favor moment. I will say that. I think that, you know, South Carolina has just a rich history of racism, right? Like that's a fact. I'm not speaking off emotions or anything like that. That's a fact. But I also know that I've ingrained myself in this community. Like this community, they know me for who I am, and they haven't judged me off of a statement that they didn't like. They didn't judge me off of, you know, something that I did that they disagree with, right? I mean, I think they judged me off of my entire career, like my entire, like it's a relationship. And when you're in a relationship, when you're in a marriage, no, not one thing should allow your marriage to suffer to a point where, you know, you get divorced. You work through things. So, you know, for me, I've worked through things in this city that people would want to recognize me in that way. And I do think the statue has multiple meanings. I do. I think it is, you know, the fact that we can recognize a woman in which statues aren't bestowed in that way. Two, I do think it's recognizing, you know, a successful coach. I do think it recognizes, you know, a Black woman. It recognizes someone who's been a part of this community. Like I've ingrained myself in the community. I do think it, you know, amongst, you know, all the reputation that the state has for its historical, you know, the racism. I do think it combats that. So it combats a lot of things that's given this state a, you know, a bad name. And the only way that you can come from under that reputation is build on some positive things that people can be proud of. So it means a great deal because I do feel like it's a place in which people can come and appreciate for what it is or what it represents to them.
Now, we've gotten this far into the conversation on a Charlotte talk show without talking about the Charlotte Sting. You played here from 1999 to 2005, the majority of your WNBA career. What comes to mind when you think about your time playing here?
I only think about great times. Like I still have like great friendships with my teammates from the Charlotte Sting. You know, Andrea Stinson just came to the book tour here in Columbia. You know, she braved the rain to come out and support. She comes to our games throughout the season. You know, I speak to Allison Feaster often, and then Charlotte Smith is my spiritual sister. Like, so I only have great positive memories when it comes to the Charlotte Sting. I got people in my life, like one of our ball girls, Stephanie Roach, and two of them, Ty Shields. You know, we're still a part of each other's lives. We wish each other happy birthdays and Merry Christmas. And, you know, they just text me about the book. They're reading the book and so many lessons that taught them when they were young and ball girls for the Charlotte Sting. So it's only great memories that I keep near and dear to my heart anytime someone brings up Charlotte Sting.
We need to take a break, and we will have more with Dawn Staley coming up right here on Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
We're back on Charlotte Talks. I'm Eric Spanberg, in for Mike Collins. Coming up a little later in the show, we're going to check in with Michael Sauls of the State Newspaper in Columbia and Miller Yoho from the Charlotte Sports Foundation. Miller has some exciting news on the Ally tip-off to share. Our guest now is very familiar with the LI tip-off after winning it last year in front of a near-capacity crowd of over 15,000 fans at the Spectrum Center. Many of them there to see one coach and her team, Dawn Staley and the South Carolina Gamecocks. Dawn Staley joins us now. She has taken her team to the Final Four 7 times in the past decade while winning 3 national championships. Her basketball resume is the equivalent of an Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony winner in entertainment. We're discussing her new book, Uncommon Favor, Basketball, North Philly, My Mother, and the Life Lessons I Learned from All 3. That book, published by Black Privilege Publishing, is out and available now wherever books are sold. Dawn is also making her way around the country, just having a book stop in Columbia last week. Before the break, Dawn was sharing how her connections and relationships from the Charlotte Sting are still near and dear to her today. I want to ask you now, Dawn, what do you think of when you see that young woman in that blue and orange Charlotte Sting uniform dribbling down the court?
I mean, I just think that I was in a place of happiness, like pure happiness. I was playing in a league that took forever to get started. And then I was in a position to just play during a time of my career. Like I was in the best, you know, you don't reach your peak, your career peak in basketball at 22 or 23. Like you know, the right ages of like 28, 29, 30, you know, 28 to 32 is probably when you are at your best. And I got to experience that when I was with the Charlotte Sting. So, and I gave, like, it was a time of giving to the community, giving to young people who just really adored our team for one reason or another. They really adore. Charlotte was a place that loved on women's basketball long before it was popular.
I want to ask you about one of the things that surprised me most reading your book, which is crime. Not you committing crime, but you being fascinated by crime. You write in the book about your friendship with Judge Clifton Newman, who presided over the Alec Murdaugh case in 2023, and he invited you to attend a murder trial, not the Murdaugh trial, and you sat in for a week. So how did all of that come about?
I'm really fascinated by the entire process, and long before, you know, Alec Murdaugh, his trial. You know, when you get to sit in the same room as a judge who's done multiple, you know, homicide cases, you know, and I'm a Dateline, I'm a Forensic Files, I'm all of those, like, books I read, I enjoy, you know, the morbidness of crime, right? So after the trial, I mean, there was a law in my life, I guess. And he told me he was actually presiding over this double murder case, and to come to the courtroom. And I was like, okay, well, you know, it's sort of a downtime for me. Let me go do it. And I didn't know how long it was going to last. It actually lasted the entire week. And I went every day, would sit down and, you know, just see how the prosecution team worked and the defensive team worked. And it was just amazing how much they go, you know, back and forth. It's very strategic, very much like a team and very much like a game that you play, that you're really trying to outfox, you know, the next move. And to sit there and I couldn't, like, I was like overly stimulated. Like I saw all the way to the deliberations, and I was like, damn, this could take forever. So I'm sitting there, but the intensity during that moment, like when I was in the courtroom just talking to some other people, and they were like, verdict's in. And I'm looking around and people are scuffling and trying to, you know, get to their seats. And it takes a little bit longer. You know, we're rushing, but it doesn't take that. I mean, it takes a while to get the jury back in, to get, you know, defense team and the you know, and everybody back together. And then to hear the verdict, to see the impact, to see the impact of, the person that was on trial, to see the family impacted, to see the prosecution have done their job, to see the defense team just try to fight for somebody's life. And, you know, it's just a lot of working parts that I like. You know, I like to just kind of sit back and watch how people operate. And it's more like how people watch our program and the things that we do out there on the court and into the community and what we do to try to win a basketball game. So I just like the inner workings of how teams operate.
And as you say, this is very serious stuff. I'm not trying to make light of a murder trial, but I did laugh when you wrote about how you weren't sure of the decorum and you didn't know where to sit because you didn't want to favor one side or the other.
So. Yes. And then yeah, I think I wrote about this in a book. Then I saw, you know, one of my neighbors was the expert witness. Well, not only the expert witness, he was the emergency room doctor that worked on the patients that was involved in the case. So I'm like, I'm looking around like, that's Chris. Like, and then I'm like, oh my God, I got a neighbor that can show me pictures, that can talk to me about like the rush that he gets when, you know, he's in his element. So I think it's just fascinating.
Now, as you write a lot, and it's in the book's title, North Philadelphia is where you're from. North Philadelphia is in your soul, every bit as much as South Carolina, perhaps more so. But it's an interesting dichotomy because you grew up in North Philadelphia, but your parents were originally from South Carolina. Then their relationship and their marriage occurred after they had moved to Philadelphia. And you write a lot about the differences of moving to South Carolina. Of course, you'd played at University of Virginia, you'd played for Charlotte, but still, this is a big move when you came this way. How are you doing on the transition to Southern life 17 years in at South Carolina?
I mean, I would consider myself a Southerner. You know, 17 years, like, it's actually, it's almost mirroring the amount of time that I spent in Philly. You know, like, I left Philly at 18 to go to Virginia. I did come back for a few years after that. But I just feel like wherever I am, I want to ingrain myself and to make it like home. So Philly's always going to be home. Like, North Philly's always going to hold a special place in my heart. And the fact that I've been at South Carolina for 17 years now, it means a great deal. You don't make moves at this stage in your career and life just because you want something new. Like, for me, I'm settled. I know where I'm going to get my hair done. You know, I know the grocery store I like to go to. I mean, it's hard to uproot. And then the people here are so incredibly, like, gracious and nice and accommodating and supportive and really take you for who you are. Like, I like that, to go somewhere and try to build that. I mean, it's going to take another 10 to 17 years to do something like that. But I love where I work. I love where I live. I love the people that are in my life here. So it's a pretty good life that, you know, I mean, I do have a stressful job, but it balances out, you know, the stress of the job with just some really great people here.
So I want to read you this was the one that got me. You write, quote, "Socially, I had to get used to certain things, such as the molasses pace of the South and the fact that every conversation lasts twice as long as it does in the North and inevitably contains way TMI." By the way, as a lifelong Southerner, I can't argue with any of that. I think what you're saying is you're just comfortable with it now.
I am. It's so, I mean, I thought it was, you know, I'm from Philly. You know, you don't really give too many people eye contact. You wave and you nod, and that's about all you get, you know. But now it's when you're here, literally, like, if I just go to the grocery store for, a gallon of milk, there's probably, I would say, 3 to 5 people that I'm having like in-depth conversations with, and they're cool though. They really are. I think South Carolina is a place in which they want you to feel a part of their community. Like, it is, like, I think they have an insatiable desire for closeness and Southern hospitality and all of those things. So I just think that, I think it works. It works. Going to the grocery store for me is an adventure. Like, you get to talk to a lot of different people about where they are in their life. And I think it's super cool. You know, they feel so comfortable with you. And I do think that sometimes people see me on television and they watch the games. And then if they see me in person, it really feels like, you know, we're neighbors and we know each other, but we don't, but they approach it that way. And I just think that's the coolest thing about being a Southerner. Now, I haven't ingrained myself that much to where I would probably go up to somebody and immediately start talking to them. I haven't gotten that part yet, but I'm here for a while. So when that happens, I think it will be a revelation for me. But I doubt it. I doubt it.
Tell me about, you write in the book about the sellouts, the 11,000 season ticket holders, the growth of this program, which everyone knows has been so incredible. And you write that having a Black woman lead that team is, quote, inviting Black people to feel like South Carolina is their program too, end quote. Tell me a little bit more about what you mean by that.
So, well, I just answered a question about just having to talk to people. They'll come up and they've done that. And then the conversations that I've had with some of the older Black people that live here in South Carolina, you know, they tell the story of not being able to actually walk on this campus. They've talked about not coming to games and only coming to our games. It's just, I do think they identify with me and where we are and what we're trying to do. And basketball is really a vessel for other things to breathe and grow. And I think that's pretty cool that they have someone that looks like them, that sounds like them, that is representative of them. And for them to actually do something that they haven't done, which is walk this campus, come to our games, enjoy themselves, and give, you know, I think when you come to our games, it's a cultural difference. Cause it's not just, it's some of everybody that really, really enjoy being in the company of everyone. It's a hodgepodge of cultural greatness to me. And I do think it's going to continue to grow. I mean, we've been here for 17 years, so I think it's safe to say that a lot of them have grown with our program, and they are proud to have me as the head women's basketball coach of our women's basketball team.
We're coming up towards the end of our time. I want to ask you two other things real quickly. One is just about the women's game itself. You coached against both Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. That is the rivalry in the WNBA. There are, from outside people, fans, there have been some ugly racial overtones to it, but the rivalry itself is fascinating. How do you reconcile all those things, and where do you think it ends up?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I'm not new to basketball. Like, some people are new to our game. Some people are just now following our game, and they're probably singularly focused on just that. And there's so much more. When you open yourself up to learning and growing and wanting to know more and involving yourself more. I think it opens you up to appreciate what women's basketball is all about. Like, you know, I think Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese are just one of the stories, like one of the many stories of our game. They're two of a lot of talent in the WNBA. Like there's so much more talent in the WNBA that we're not focused on. I think we look, I do think that everything that's happening in our sport is happening because we are a sport and they're looking at us as a sport. And they haven't always, people haven't always looked at women's basketball as a sport. They have this certain, you know, narrow-mindedness of what it's supposed to be. I mean, it's in the same line and breadth of any other sport with highly motivated, talented individuals just competing at the highest level. And sometimes that gets chippy. So what? Like, I mean, the soccer fields get chippy, right? You know, the volleyball court gets chippy. Softball gets chippy. Football gets chippy. I mean, all sports, they get chippy and they create headlines and storylines. I just hope that we don't get lost and losing all the other things that are happening in our sports because we're singularly focused on one of them that, you know, if you follow how they respond and react to the rivalry as competitors, I mean, we should take heed to how they're handling it.
That's a good place to leave it. Dawn Staley, thanks so much for joining us here on Charlotte Talks.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Dawn Staley's new book is called Uncommon Favor, and it's out now. When we return, perspective from two people who have seen the influence and accomplishments of Dawn Staley on women's sports in the Carolinas and across the nation. Michael Sauls is a sports writer with The State, and he is a native of Columbia and went to South Carolina, so he's seen the program from top to bottom. Miller Yoho is the head of marketing and communications at the Charlotte Sports Foundation, and they hosted Dawn Staley and the University of South Carolina last year in the Ally Tip-Off at Spectrum Center. They also have some big news about women's college basketball to come in the year ahead. Stay with us right here on Charlotte Talks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Eric Spanberg in for Mike Collins. We just spoke with Dawn Staley about her new book, Uncommon Favor, and her role in women's basketball. Staley has been a major force in the game since the early 1990s when she starred at the University of Virginia. Joining me now are two people who have had an up-close view of Staley's program. Michael Sauls is a sports reporter at the State newspaper in Columbia, and Miller Yoho is the head of marketing and communications at the Charlotte Sports Foundation. Welcome to you both.
Thanks.
So Miller, let's start with you and the Sports Foundation. Your group created an event 2 years ago called the Ally Tip-Off, and you brought Caitlin Clark and Iowa here to play Virginia Tech in a neutral site game. What was unusual about that? You hear about this kind of thing all the time with the men's game. What was unusual about that?
Yeah, so our role in the city is to bring high-profile events, and traditionally when people think high-profile in sports, they think towards the men's space. But what we looked at, and we had an incredible partner and Ally, was the growth of the women's game. You have such dynamic personalities, and it came to have the opportunity to bring Iowa and then also Virginia Tech, who had made the Final Four with Elizabeth Kitley the year before. So you had two Final Four teams, brought them to a neutral site game. And what we were able to do is create an event where I believe that year was over 15,000, and we set the record for a single game regular season women's college basketball game in North Carolina history. So it was an amazing event. We had people showing out just to see Caitlin Clark, to see the game. And the atmosphere was truly unique, and it showed that we could grow that event. And shortly thereafter, Ally extended it for us to keep doing it into the future.
And if I recall correctly, the idea sprang from the previous year's Final Four when there was record viewership for women's basketball. And the idea was, this sport is obviously booming. Let's see if we can do a neutral site game in Charlotte. And you pulled it off.
Yeah, exactly. And we, at our time, our executive director, Danny Morrison, as he eloquently put it, it's common sense. We saw the viewership was there, the attendance was there, and it made sense to, you know, you had a star in Caitlin Clark. And I remember there were signs of people who showed up from North Dakota just to see her in that event. And it made sense to have it. But shortly thereafter, what we saw wasn't just the Caitlin Clark effect. It was the game. Everyone was fell in love, and it had devoted following forever, but it became mainstream in terms of women's basketball.
And you brought it back last year, as you mentioned, with a doubleheader that included South Carolina. What kind of experience did you and the foundation have with Dawn Staley and her team?
You know, it's interesting. We had that first year, and we mentioned Caitlin Clark. It's tough to talk about the women's game without saying her name and what she's done. But in terms of cult of personality and people there to see, it was extremely similar in terms of looking at the fans of people there to see Dawn Staley and her team. Just the atmosphere when she stepped on the court, when people saw her and her persona, it was a very similar feeling of the star. Which was exciting. And she certainly has ties to Charlotte, which made it a no-brainer to have her with her team's talent as they were defending national champions that year. So there was a buzz when she stepped on the court, returned to Charlotte on the playing surface this time as a coach. There was a lot of energy in there that was very similar to what we saw the year before.
And I'm curious, what kind of insight did you get, if any, if you saw them practice or if you were just around her at all, press conferences, other things like that? Just what her demeanor is, how she operates her program.
Yeah, no, it's occasionally I get a little bit behind the scenes and get to see who these people are. And she is really what you see is what you get. One of my favorite things I saw is we do a gifting experience for the players. We worked with Belk for it, and it's unbelievable. The players got all these gifts, stuff like that. And they were saying it's better than the Final Four. But the coolest thing was Dawn Staley tagged along just to see it, and she had a great time. But I believe it was a Saturday night. The game was a Sunday, and she had her iPad. I was like, is she watching film or something? No, she was watching the South Carolina men's football team. She was so invested, and that just shows who she is. She loves that team. She has a great relationship with Shane Beamer, I believe. And I thought that was just a really cool moment to see how she's embraced being a part of South Carolina and kind of who she is. She's a fan at heart.
That's the voice of Miller Yoho. He's with the Charlotte Sports Foundation. Also with us is Michael Sauls. He's a reporter at the state newspaper in Columbia. Michael, you cover the women's team for the state, so you see Dawn Staley as much as anyone other than her players, probably. What is she like to cover?
I mean, it's phenomenal, really. First off, she puts a whole lot of importance on local media, which a lot of not just college coaches, but professional coaches and kind of sports in general don't do a lot of that nowadays. So I think that's really fun. And obviously, as a local media person, that helps. But no, I mean, she's great with the media. Obviously, the team is phenomenal. The program that she has built up is phenomenal. You know, my last job, I was covering mid-major hoops where nobody was there. I was the only reporter at the press conference. Here, I mean, it could just be a random weekly press conference and everybody's there because every word that Dawn Staley says is important somehow. So it's really fun covering this team. And obviously, when you have a perennial contender who has made, you know, 5 straight Final Fours, you know, people care about it and people read and engage with the content. So, and she treats us nice.
I don't know if have you had a chance to read the book yet?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so you know that one of the things she writes about over and over, you may have known this because you've covered her for so long, but I did not realize this. She talks about how she did not like to speak really to anyone as a child and even into early adulthood. That just was not something she was comfortable doing, particularly with strangers. And so it's really interesting, as she writes in the book, that she now has a job where she has to do public speaking. She has to speak to the media every day or every other day. And of course she has to address her players and the school and all these obligations. Do you ever get any glimpse of her sort of how she came out of that shell, or does she ever talk about the fact that this is not maybe her favorite thing to do?
It's honestly wild. I mean, like, if you sat in the room at a press conference, Dawn Staley, you'd have no idea that at one point in her life, she was a massive introvert. I mean, just last week, I was at her book tour stop here in Columbia, and the way that she works a room, and she's walking around talking to every single person she's running into, she's up on the stage talking to people. No, you would have genuinely no idea that at one point she was an introvert. Now, granted, I'm sure if you knew her from when she was in her playing days, or you knew her growing up, maybe you'd know that. But just as a 23-year-old who has been covering the team for a little over 6 months now, went to Carolina and has grew up in Columbia and has known of Dawn Staley, you would have never guessed that at any point in her life she was an introvert.
Miller, did you see any introversion while she was in Charlotte?
No, I think the press conference comment is a great one by Michael. I've seen my fair share. I always sit in the back and watch the coach and silently evaluate, whether it's talking points or whatnot. But the two things as I think back to her press conference is she owns the room and she's authentically herself. There's no real talking points or anything. Everything is heartfelt. Not that talking points can't be heartfelt, but two, she knows that every word she says matters. I think that's something Michael says, like she understands the importance of her words, and she was very selective. She said, talked about how important the event was. She did those things, but she knew whatever she said after a win was the headline. And so talking about the importance of women's basketball and the way it's treated, she knew it'd be a national headline across after this event. So it was very obvious afterwards that it was calculating what she said, but the way she said it was authentically herself.
Michael, I'm curious. You mentioned that you are a South Carolina alum. You've been around the program for most, if not all, of your life. What is your view of Dawn Staley now compared with when she first got to South Carolina or when you first noticed her at South Carolina?
Yeah, it's one of those things where so she was very active, is and was very active in the community in the early days. My mom runs a nonprofit that provides emergency and transitional and affordable housing for homeless families in the Midlands of South Carolina. And one of the things that Dawn Staley did early on in the days of her coaching here was get out in the community and volunteer. So like I remember just, oh, this is the South Carolina women's basketball coach just volunteering with these homeless kids. And it's something that she's continued to do despite the fact that, this program has turned into something bigger. So initially it was just like, oh, this is just, the basketball coach who's coming to volunteer. And now it's, as you go into a student and you're a student at the university and you're watching them win. I was there when they won the national title in 22, as I remember everybody worships the ground that Dawn Staley walks on as a student and stuff. And now I'm covering her as a reporter, and it's just kind of like, okay, there is definitely some still kind of starstruck in it that I've kind of had to, work out of in the last 6 months. But it's definitely cool to just kind of see it from, I guess, perspective as a kid to perspective as a student to now it's, in a way we're kind of peers in the professional realm of sports and sports media. So it's definitely been cool to kind of watch that, evolve over the past decade, I guess.
And if you grew up in Columbia, which you said you did, you then have a memory of South Carolina women's basketball before it was South Carolina women's basketball. I'm just curious what it's been like to see the sport evolve like this. I think for many people, women's basketball just feels like it's rushed upon us the last 5 years. Obviously, that's not true. There were a lot of pioneers that were building the sport, but from a South Carolina standpoint, what's it been like to see women's basketball become such a major factor in the school's overall sports landscape?
Yeah, it's been so cool. I think a lot of what Dawn Staley talks about is how Asia Wilson coming to South Carolina legitimized the program. And I had some Notre Dame fans in my family, so I remember, the Skylar Diggins Smith's like era of Notre Dame. So that was when I kind of first caught on to women's basketball. But then I remember when Asia Wilson committed to South Carolina, I remember watching that on TV, like in the kitchen on ESPN, like not really understanding what was going on, but to see from that to the first victory parade when they won in 17 to where it is now. I mean, it is just absolutely insane to witness the growth of this sport, not just in Columbia, but just, nationally and worldwide. It's been second to none to watch that.
And Michael, what would your younger self have thought if someone told you, I don't know, even 10 years ago, that the city of Columbia would put up a statue of the women's basketball coach at South Carolina before a football coach?
Yeah, I don't think my younger self would have an answer for you, to be completely honest with you. Lord knows about a decade ago when I was younger, it was all Spurrier and Lattimore and Connor Shaw on the football team and everything. But I mean, shoot, if you have the level of success that Dawn Staley has, I mean, it is statue worthy. So, maybe if you could drill in the 13-year-old me that this is why this is have a statue, then it would make sense. But Lord knows, I mean, With her resume, it's statue worthy and then some.
Miller, I'm curious, when you see how much the women's game has grown, what else do you think is possible for Charlotte?
Well, I kind of want to go back to what Michael said first when he was talking about the impact. You know, we talked about, I don't remember, there's a couple years ago in the men's tournament, there was Florida Gulf Coast, the Dunk State or whatever it was. And they always talked about the amount of enrollment that comes up via that for the university. And I'd be fascinated, and that's probably why there should be a statue. The amount of enrollment that's been affected just by, you know, those runs to the Final Four, five straight, those national titles. How many, the university is still a business, and how admissions have been affected by that. I imagine it's well deserving of a statue and more if you think about the notoriety that comes about with having a basketball coach like Dawn Staley. But to go to your question, Eric, for Charlotte, I think, you know, this year in the Ally Tip-Off, we recently announced we have NC State back, which is returning amazing players, bringing in talent. We also have USC, the West Coast version, I'd have to say, the Southern Cal, which is a huge brand and exciting, and a two top 10 teams. But I'm looking back, you know, women's basketball has historically been supported in the state. I was kind of doing a little research looking at the largest women's basketball games in history. And we have to put the asterisk with the Ally Tip-Off saying it's only the largest regular season game because there was the women's Final Four here in Charlotte that drew over 23,000 for both games, or for
That's
two of
a
the games.
good reminder, Miller. 1996 and Pat Summitt, the incredible Hall of Fame coach in Tennessee, won that Final Four. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
And no, I think that's the historical context. And what's great with the women's basketball is the more visibility and the more eyes it gets, the more popularity of people showing up. People want great sports. They want to be tied to things. They want storylines. That's why a Caitlin Clark, Dawn Staley, that's why, you know, the LSU versus Iowa rivalries were so great in those because people love narratives. And women's basketball has had those. It's just for people to be able to show up and see, it has to shine a light on it. And for us, going back to the common sense comment, it was there. It's just once you show the awareness, people show up. And, you know, last year I said we set the record in 2023. We set it again in 2024. And that was a part of having a double header and having a team like South Carolina with a coach like Dawn Staley. People showed up because they wanted to see those early regular season compelling matchups the same way they want to see a men's regular season early matchup.
And I have to ask you, Miller, since the Ally Tip-Off is under contract through 2026, which means another year beyond the USC West version and NC State,
Oh, Eric, I knew exactly where you're
is
going.
there a chance that the real USC, as Michael might put it, could be back?
As a Clemson grad, I'll never admit to that being the real USC. I'll deflect from that by making that joke. But you know, we what's exciting is Ally, and that kind of goes back to you have a brand or a company that's really invested in women's sports, what they've done and their sponsorship, the ACC, a lot of things across women's basketball and across it in the women's sports and then other places. And I think they're doing the Aces and WNBA, a lot of stuff. Their commitment to sign a 3-year contract based off of 1 year proof of concept with that first one was amazing and allowed us to have long-term conversations. As you know, Eric, you don't just sign the deal, you have a conversation, and then the next day you sign a letter of intent and a deal. There's conversations going on with a variety of teams. And for us, we're always looking to create the most compelling matchup for Charlotte that people can come to attend, that drive to. And so I won't answer your question, but I'll say we're continuing to look at how do we continue to evolve, grow, and make the Ally Tip-Off as powerful as possible for people here in Charlotte.
Michael, you knew a Clemson guy could not give you a straight answer. So, but he made a good point about the audience and the interest that Dawn Staley has driven. I am assuming that you see that day to day.
Yeah, I mean the South Carolina's led the country in attendance for the past decade, I think. It might be 11 years by now. I've kind of honestly lost count of how many years it's been straight, but I mean, you talk about building a program from the ground up. You built a fan base from almost the ground up. I mean, those early Dawn Staley days of South Carolina, next to nobody was in the stands, and now it's almost standing room only, constant sellouts at home. I mean, the interest in Columbia itself is very powerful, but I mean, shoot, you go to her book tour in Philadelphia, her book tour in New York, and there are Gamecock fans everywhere. You go to Tampa for the Final Four, and there's, you know, Garnet Black in the stands everywhere. So I mean, she has built up the interest in this program to where it's not even it's beyond a regional thing, it's a national thing.
So that will have to be the last word. We're going to keep the Clemson and South Carolina war at bay for just a few more seconds. My thanks, first of all, to Dawn Staley, the South Carolina women's basketball coach and author of Uncommon Favor. Also to Miller Yoho. He is head of marketing and communications at the Charlotte Sports Foundation. And last but not least, Michael Sauls, who covers women's basketball at the state newspaper. For Mike Collins, I'm Eric Spanberg. Thanks for listening to Charlotte Talks.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.